Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
For sure.
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 Sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
Sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
Sure.
For sure.
For sure.
Welcome to another episode of For Sure, a 200-foot podcast. I'm Peter. I'm Peter. Jay, dude, hey, remember when I said we were going to start recording?
Like, what? Pete, hang on.
Okay.
I almost scored. All right.
Are you playing NHL while we're recording?
No.
This is ridiculous.
Okay, this is embarrassing. The answer is yes, but no.
Okay. Wait. So I just got finished teaching 1984, so I'm able to process that. But for our listeners who aren't as skilled in doublethink as I am, what the hell is going on right now?
Okay. All right. So I mean. All right. I guess I'll just say. So Pete, I've like many others been suddenly stricken with an obsession. Not unlike Captain Holt in Brooklyn Nine-Nine reaching Cupcake City in Quasi Cupcakes.
Oh, my God.
I have been now stricken with just this form of obsession that is commonly now referred to as puzzle hockey. I was skimming the old Facebook feed the other day, which I know is dangerous for your health these days, but... Like all things Facebook, they throw things in there that you don't really expect, which aka ads.
Yeah.
And I saw an ad for this thing called Puzzle Hockey, and officially licensed by the NHLPA, not by the National Hockey League, but just by the players. And it's basically like a Quasi Cupcakes. It's you kind of build your roster. A bunch of player likenesses are in here, so you can like it gives you like a starter team, and then as you play, you get points and coins and diamonds and all that other crap that all these other in-app purchase games are now built on because we're all just lemmings that will just get easily preyed upon. But as they say, every man has his price. So
right.
So you get like a starter team, and then you basically play these little puzzle things to you're basically defeating defenders for a chance to score on goal. And I will say that the neat feature about this that kind of sets it apart from some of these other puzzle quest things is it kind of turns into a kind of a quick prompt touch response game, which either allows you to like make a pass or to make a shot on goal. So if you get like three in a row, it powers up your certain players, and you've got power players, you've got skill players, snipers, defensemen, da da da. And so once you get to a certain point, basically the bottom part of your phone turns into like a little touchpad with a puck on it, and you basically try and move it around like kind of basically left and right deeks to kind of deke out the goalie, and then you just swipe up. So think of it kind of like the way the Pokemon Go stuff was sort of set up with having, the swipe up to throw a bunch of Pokeballs at something to get you to catch a Pokemon. But, there's a lot going on in this game, but it's a lot of fun, and that's why I was late to remembering that we're actually recording a podcast today. So I recommend it for you. I know you like games here and there.
I do.
I got to say, the likenesses in cartoon form for some of these players is really, really authentic. There's obviously so much you can do. There's like a couple of them are, kind of like computer generated to look as much as the person. But then there's like you can tell the guys that, like, they actually spent extra time on. Like, James Neal's facial features, like, this is, like, absolutely unmistakably as James Neal. Whereas, like, you know, right now I'm looking at Jason Spezza, and it kind of looks like just a sim version of Spezza, not really a, you know, like, a fleshed out, like, there's no facial hair, there's no, like, kind of shadowing along his temples and stuff, so.
How much does Tom Wilson look like a garbage can?
Oh, well, what's weird is I haven't run into him yet, so I'm going to have to let you know at a later date. But when I do see him, I'm sure the likeness will be very accurate because a guy like that really deserves all the attention he needs in order to be properly represented in this game. So I recommend it to anybody who's, hey, for your commute on the subway. If you're at a wedding reception, you know, it's a great little time waster. So, now that I've wasted the open to our show, let's begin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely I will check it out. I'm a video game aficionado, and definitely I'm really open to anything that can, like, waste time when I should be doing something else. Mm-hmm. So this sounds really good. You know, for a while, I was really into Candy Crush. You know, like you said, sort of like Captain Holt. You know, I'm a pretty strong person, but I'm only so strong.
Yep.
And I mean, like, I got really into it. Like, I remember I created a strategy guide called "I Don't Think You're Ready for This Jelly," and it was pretty good, pretty fun.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So
I'm glad I could introduce something that could potentially and drastically alter your workflow.
It's perfect. I mean, like, you know, I can just put on a movie in class and sit there for 70 minutes and just click away. I mean, that's fantastic. You know, helping our nation's youth, one click at a time. Speaking of one click at a time, our season is clicking along. That was a horrible transition, but we're going to leave it in.
Circumstances, I'll allow it.
We're going to leave it in. We're going to leave it in. So. So the season is underway. Last time we recorded an episode, it was way too early to really talk too much about stuff that's going on. And now it's only just mostly too early to talk about stuff that's going on. But we're going to do it anyway. So let's get into our season standout so far.
Yes.
So again, obviously keeping in mind that Austin Matthews is not going to score 274 points or whatever he's on track to do. But
I don't know, Peter. I don't know, man. Like, when you are watching a National Hockey League broadcast and they put up a graphic letting you know his pace sets him towards about 148 goals this year. I mean, if they spent the time to put on the graphic there that this is something that could happen, I think it's pretty reasonable to think that it's actually going to happen. So I think we shouldn't be too hasty in dismissing the 100 and 150 or 120 goal pace that he's on. But fair.
Yeah. So I'm gonna talk about my first standout here is actually two people, and we have seen both of them this early season. One of them I just talked about. And so Austin Matthews and David Pastrnak have 10 goals and 8 goals, respectively, so far this season. Toronto has played 8 games. So Austin Matthews has 10 goals and 8 games as we're recording this, because I'm pretty sure they're playing tonight, tonight being Saturday. And Boston has played 7 games. So Pastrnak has 8 goals in 7 games. They are, I think all of them came against us, but
yeah.
I kind of went to my happy place during that game. I was having flashbacks of the Montreal 10-1, debacle that I wrote the recap for last year. And I felt really bad for JJ having to write that recap, because I know how frustrating it can be once it kind of gets to that turning point where you're like, Well, this is just terrible. Like, I can't feel my feelings anymore. But anyway, I just wanted to point out that even though this is an NHL podcast, we also are both Red Wings fans. And basically, a fun statistic is that Austin Matthews and David Pastrnak have scored as many goals as the Red Wings have goal differential, right? The Red Wings goal differential is negative 18, and Pastrnak and Matthews have scored 18 goals, which is cool. Cool.
Yeah.
As somebody used to say. So basically, actually, well, even better, we could just say that together they have scored 3 more goals than the Red Wings' entire team this year, because the Red Wings have 15 goals. So, Cool. But, like anytime something like this happens, obviously, you know, we always make a joke, like, you know, like let's say I remember one year somebody like Luke Glendening scored a goal in the first game or something like that. And I remember it was like, oh, he's on pace to score 82 goals. And obviously everybody's joking when they say that. Yep. But all kidding aside, Austin Matthews is having a ridiculous opening to the season. I know you listen to it occasionally, but like, have you heard the Full 60 podcast? I know I talked about it during our interview, I think, with Will last time. Have you heard the Full 60 where Craig talks to the skills coach, Daryl Belfry, I believe his name is?
I have not, so I'm excited for you to regale me with the information posted there. Sorry, Craig.
Yeah, no. So
I'll see you at the next game. Sorry.
I will say this. I know I'm certainly prone to hyperbole. Nikki will tell you that I am very, very prone to hyperbole. But I do think that this is not hyperbolic to say it's probably the most fascinating, at least hockey interview I've ever heard, because it was one of those things where I did not like. I learned so much that I had no idea. Like, I had such a big misconception on how some of this works. And let me just tell you this, that basically the last two seasons in the offseason, Austin Matthews has completely revamped his shot. And so obviously last year he did very well. But he decided he wanted to revamp it again. And according to Daryl Belfry, who works with him, he completely revamped his shot in a 24-hour period.
Oh, okay.
Which is crazy. And like, it doesn't make sense, right? It sounds like, well, there's no way that can be true. But like, I don't want to say too much because I do want people to go listen to the interview. But then once you hear how they do it, like, it's amazing. It's astonishing. And as somebody who is, I mean, I'm a teacher because that's naturally what my instinct is. My natural instinct is to basically help people learn how to do things. Like, that's what I've always done.
Yep.
And so as somebody who does that for a living, it was just fascinating to hear how they do that. Like, how, you know, obviously they're not going to go into every specific detail, but you know, the basics of how they accomplish that. So obviously whatever they did is working. Austin Matthews is off to a tremendous start, certainly, you know, helped by the people around him, but at the same time, he is putting up a ton of goals. So Jay, what's one of your standouts so far?
Well, we can already see the Rasmus Dahlin effect imbuing members of the Sabres with supernatural powers, because Linus Ullmark is doing ridiculous things, such that his save percentage is currently sitting at 1,000. So this is that's pretty cool. I guess in the back of my mind, I was thinking about how, think of all those Sabres teams that were actually pretty darn good and like just couldn't get there. And I'm, you know, there's the Drury Brière days, but then there's also the French Connection days. And
yeah.
And I just feel like if this is, I think it'd be really fun for the Sabres to be kind of like a 2006 Tigers situation, where it's like the year before, just like, okay, how long is this going to take? And then the next year, you're in the World Series. So I think it'd be really funny and amusing to have the Sabres kind of do a little bit of a Golden Knights scenario where it's like, none of this makes sense, but let's just go with it. And so that's pretty cool. I'm not exactly sure, obviously, how long that can last. But my opinion is that Linus Ullmark is just a real great guy, and it really shows how you can be a better goalie when you know that you have this stud defenseman in front of you. So maybe you can relax a little bit more, right? I think that's, yeah. You know, like they say, you gotta have a couple screws loose to be a goaltender. But you know, I think I don't know. Maybe there's not enough being said as of late about Or maybe there is, and maybe it's just turned into white noise because it's being said so much. But if your defense is constantly a house of horrors, right? Yeah. Like, you, as a goaltender, you're obviously thinking about more things than you thought you needed to, or things you didn't even think you had to worry about, right? But now that you've got maybe something that's a little bit more stable in front of you, maybe you can branch out. You know, maybe hit up a different coffee place this time, right? You know, change up your lifestyle, and then all of a sudden you find yourself with a 1,000 save percentage. So that's pretty cool. Who's next on your fun standout shenanigans?
Yeah, I mean, like, especially like, I like that you added the word fun to it, because, you know, that wasn't necessarily part of it, but I really like that you added it, because like the whole thing. You know, like in a little while, we're going to be talking to Sean McAdoo. And, you know, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. And when you think of, like, people who try to make hockey fun, he is near the top of my list, if not at the top.
I would agree.
So I really, you know, that's why I said, like, I'm really glad to be able to talk to him a little bit later, because of how much he helps me have fun with hockey. And so, like I said, I'm really glad you added that qualifier to this, because my next one is definitely fun. Although maybe not for their fan base, or maybe not for, you know, the bottom line in there. Carolina. Let's talk about Carolina for a second.
Sure.
So 7 games in, they sit atop the Metropolitan. Now, to be fair, they played 2 more games than New Jersey, who I believe is playing right now. And they played 1 more game than Columbus. So by the time you listen to this, they might not be at the top of the Metro anymore. But, you know, right now they're 4-2-1, off to a good start. Carolina's goaltending has always really hurt them. It's happening right now. They are losing to Columbus. Or no, Colorado, 2-0. And I don't know. It says live, so I'm not sure if it's over yet. But basically – oh, yes, I'm sorry. It's it's happening right now. So – it is, they lost 3-1. So they are now 4-3-1. But Colorado has been one of those teams that everybody's been waiting to take a step forward, right?
Yep.
And it's always been the goaltending. It's always been the goaltending that lets them down. And so it's going to be interesting to see if their goaltending can keep up this year. However, here's the stat that kind of jumps out at you, and it's just kind of amazing. Carolina has taken 515 shots this year. 515 shots. Right. Now that's Corsi 4, so that's not necessarily unblocked, right? So they've taken 515 shots in 7 games. They've allowed 325 shots. So they are positive 190 shots in 7 games.
Oh boy.
Which is astonishing. I'm almost positive this is true, that before this, there was a 2-game period where they had 100 shots on goal. They had 100 shots total in 2 games. So if I'm off, I apologize. If I'm off, it's not by very much. But so now the interesting thing is Toronto is only 6 shots behind them, but Toronto has given up many more because they are only plus 7 in shots. So wow. Toronto has taken 509 and they have allowed 502. So if you want some fun hockey, try to find Carolina and Toronto play. That should be that should be a recipe for some really fun hockey. Also, rounding out the leaders, San Jose is next on the list. Vegas and Calgary is number 5. So it's going to be interesting. Every year it's like, is this a year for Carolina? Let's see what happens. All right. So what do you got next?
Well, I worry that some people might be, a little snarky about why I decided to lead off with Ullmark, because yes, I know he's only played 1 game. It was a shutout, but the joke here, kids, is that he's still leading. So until he's not, that means the superhero powers of Rasmus Dahlin have been transferred to him, and everything can be fine. So I just want people to be clear that's fun stuff. I like Mikko Rantanen. Here's my favorite thing that constantly pops up whenever I think about or whenever I've talked about Wayne Gretzky, is that you could take away all his goals and he would still have the most points based solely on his assists. So anybody who's racking up assists at a, you know, pretty decent, if not better than average pace. I always keep an eye on him. So right now, Rantanen's leading with 11 assists and, you know, followed shortly behind by Morgan Riley and Brad Marchand, who, as you know, Peter, yes, has requested we refer to him in that way. And I don't know.
Yeah, I've started to call him Rot instead of Rat. So I think, you know, I'm trying to honor his request in my own special way.
Yep, that's totally fair. So, yeah, I'm keeping an eye on Rantanen. I'd like to see somebody just completely run away with the assists. What is what's the trophy for assists? Do they have one? Is there like a Rocket Richard for the for assists? I think maybe we should I think it's a little, you know, a little much to just instantly name it the Wayne Gretzky thing because of that standalone. But like maybe we can find like who's number two all time in assists and then make a trophy for that. I think that'd be fun.
He doesn't have a trophy named after him, so why not?
Yeah. So that's right. That'd be great. Yeah. Yep, greatest player of all time gets a trophy named after him for assists.
Yeah,
that's fun. But
all right, so let's do one more each.
So you go first.
All right, so last year, William Wild Bill Carlson, he racked up a ridiculous shooting percentage, and going into this year, everybody's like, oh man, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how he does, if he can continue on. And as of right now, he has 6 assists, right? So that's, you know, that's not too bad in terms of points. In terms of goals, it doesn't look like he's in the top group right now, right? Which has the cutoff for that is 4 goals. But we have some really interesting shooting percentages. And now, of course, this is going to go down as we go on through the year, because the NHL average is typically about 14%. But right now, David Perron from St. Louis has a 44.4 shooting percentage. And the interesting thing is the aforementioned Austin Matthews is not that far behind him with a 40% shooting percentage.
Ooh.
So now as the season goes on, that's going to go down, but it's going to be interesting to see how much it goes down, because he is, I don't want to make this whole podcast about Austin Matthews. I know people get tired of that, but man, I mean, he really is off to an amazing start. Number 3 is Elias Pettersson, or I guess Elias Pettersson, who has 38.5, and unfortunately, that's not going to change for a little bit because he's currently out with a concussion after being rock bottomed by Michael Matheson on what he says was not an intention to injure, which if the intent wasn't to hurt him, I don't know what the intent was. Yep. Like, I am always open. I am always open-minded. I'm always willing to believe, you know, willing to listen. But I don't know what the intent possibly could have been for the second part of that move. The initial hit, sure, fine. But then he basically takes him when he is in a horizontal position and slams him down to the ice. I don't know what he was trying to do, if not to hurt him. And then 4th is Kyle Palmieri from New Jersey with a 35% shooting percentage. I believe the statistic was at least his first 3 games he scored 2 goals in each game, which is incredible. So it's going to be really interesting to see as the season goes on. Are those just off to good starts and they will start to regress as the season goes on? Or you never know. Like, is Matthews, Pettersson, I mean, could be even Perron. I think he probably has the least chance out of all of them. Could some of these people keep a relatively high shooting percentage? Obviously, it's not going to be 40%. But, you know, could they break 30? I don't know. Maybe. That would be pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And you actually said my last pick. So that's actually conveniently bring this up, which is Mr. Kyle Palmieri. After being such a force for the Ducks, right? It's just real nice to have him in a conference where I have to see him more now. he's currently leading with 4 power play goals, and that's tied with Kuznetsov and with Matthews. But obviously, his shooting percentage is pretty high up there, and his points per game. It's nice, and I think that. With the Devils getting Kyle Palmieri, I mean, they were really struggling. You know, like, they got nothing out of Hall last year. So getting Palmieri is really a godsend for them. But seriously, that's, I think Paul Mary's only going to get better with the people that he's now surrounded with in New Jersey, and I'll definitely keep an eye on him. I like the guys who are just constantly scoring on the power play. It's just, you don't really see that much. I feel like that's always kind of a big pack of people leading in power play goals. I would really love either this year or in the coming years for just one person to be like the absolute lockdown. Like, if they're on the power play, this guy, it's going to get on this guy's stick. He's going to score, and it's going to happen. So I'm now putting my money on Mr. Kyle Palmieri to do exactly that.
Yeah, no, I think that sounds really cool. So what we're going to do is we're going to go next to our interview. All right, so our interview is with Sean McAdoo, a.k.a. Down Goes Brown. So we hope you enjoy it, and we'll be back soon.
And welcome back to our Too Many Awards to Mention winning segment, important interviews with important hockey people. Today, we are blessed. Actually, Peter is far exceeding my, because I'm pretty excited about this, but it's almost like this exponential excitement thing. It's like, I'm really excited to have Sean McAdoo here. And then Peter, like, is just this inaudible squee, right? It's just like, so you worry about that.
I think it's internal screaming.
Yes.
Would be the Netflix caption, but in a positive way.
Yeah, in a positive way, yeah. So for those of you who are not in the know, Mr. McAdoo is widely known as Mr. Down Goes Brown. Again, Peter, I love having guests with just simple Twitter handles. I'm waiting for the day we interview somebody with a crazy handle. He started Down Goes Brown in 2008, and he's been writing about hockey ever since with Grantland, Sportsnet, and Vice Sports. He's currently with The Athletic. Pete, only matter of time before you and I get to write our Why I'm Joining The Athletic articles. he's got a awesome, super great, and really exciting thing happening, which is a book. That's right. He's coming out with Pete, what's the name of this wonderful piece of literature that I get to add to my collection?
So the Down Goes Brown History of the NHL, the world's most beautiful sport, the world's most ridiculous league. And from Sean, from listening to you on Biscuits for all this time, to me, like, it kind of sounds like the actual title would be like This Effing League. am I close?
Yeah, that might have been one of the original drafts. The editors decided to soften it up.
so yeah, like we're gonna get into, like, you know, the current NHL season and all that stuff, but before we do, let's just make sure we get to this. So you know, tell us about your book. It's coming out October 30th. You can pre-order it. So you know, tell our readers why they should buy it, other than just because it's by you and you're awesome.
Well, it's, I mean, this is a book that I've wanted to do for a while now, and it was pretty exciting when the opportunity presented itself, because, you know, there are, I am a lifelong hockey fan. For all the criticism, for all the for all the pot shots I might take at the NHL from time to time, this has been my favorite sport. This has been my favorite sports league ever since I was a little kid. And, you know, I'm well into my fourth decade of being a hockey fan and being an NHL fan. And in all that time, I've always enjoyed the history. I've always loved hearing the old stories, and certainly there's many of them that we all know by heart, and, you know, we all know about the original six and the Richard riots and the Gretzky trade and all of that stuff, even though for many of us, you know, at least some of those things happened well before we were born. And there's, you know, all these great stories, but then there's also this other half of the history, and it's the other half that doesn't really get talked about a lot, which is just all the weird stuff, just all the strange stories, some of them are good, some are bad, some are just kind of, you know, what was going on that particular day, and that was always, even since I was a little kid, that was the stuff that appealed to me. Like, that's the stuff where if you're watching a game and it's a 7-1 blowout and they've completely run out of anything to talk about, and suddenly the color guy has to fire up some old story from 20 years ago, and you're just sitting there going, is he messing with us? Like, he's got to be making this up. And you know, it turns out that, no, the NHL history is packed with amazing athletes and amazing feats and great teams and terrible teams and everything like that, but there's also all of these little weird stories that kind of seep into the cracks. And I found in my time, you know, my 10 years or so writing about hockey, that a lot of fans, even the diehard fans who would consider themselves up to date on the history, they don't know this stuff, or they've maybe heard little bits and pieces, or maybe they heard the story once, and then, like me, they thought that's got to be a joke. That couldn't really have happened. There couldn't really have been a game where one team all wore earmuffs on the bench because the crowd was too loud. That would never happen. You know, there couldn't have been a game where in the middle of the playoffs nobody could find the league president and it ended up with a bunch of guys in yellow raincoats officiate a game. That there's no way. But of course, all this stuff did happen. And so, you know, when I do a lot of history stuff, even in the writing, even when I'm writing about something that happens today, one of my favorite things to do is to say, what has happened in the past that was kind of like this, and what can we learn from it? And so, you know, when somebody suggested doing a history book, especially right around the time that the 100th anniversary and all of that, I wanted to do it. But my condition was I don't want to write a textbook. I don't want to write a dry 300-page retelling of all the stuff that everyone already knows, because that's been done, and it's been done really, really well. It's been done by people who did it far better than I ever could. I want to tell my version of the history, which is all the real stuff and all the important stuff, but also all the goofy stuff right alongside. I think it works well, and I think people, even the diehard fans, will come away learning about some things, and it'll be fun stuff that you can kind of throw into the conversation the next time you're sitting around having a pint. You just look at your other hockey fan buddies and go, hey, did you guys ever know that this happened? And and then off you go, and they'll probably think that you're lying and that you're joking, and you can send them to the book and say it's in a real hockey book, so it has to be true now.
Growing up, my dad got me into hockey, you know, so he would tell me, you know, all the stories from, you know, that he remembers from when he was younger. And one of the ones that sticks in my mind, and, like, I wish I remember the exact details, because I don't know if it was the Mlarchuk play, but it was one play where a player had gotten cut with a skate and they were bleeding really badly. Like, I'm almost positive it was a goalie. I don't know if it was earlier than that, because Mlarchuk was like 89, so it doesn't really seem like it would fit. But I know my dad said that when he was watching, like, you know, one of those plays, the announcer said something like that, for those of you with color televisions, you know, because I guess some people, you know, it wasn't, you know, everybody didn't have a color TV. So I just remember thinking, like, oh, wow, man, that investment was worth it. I get to really see the redness of the blood. This is great.
There you go. That's the big selling point. Yeah, no, I mean, there is, you can't tell the history of the NHL without some blood and some teeth on the ice and all of that. And that's part of what makes it fascinating. In fact, there's a chapter of the book where I basically go a little bit deeper on that exact topic, and just the history of violence in the NHL and how it's, even from the first days when the league formed, it was a topic. You can find newspaper articles from those days saying this new league is not going to last if they don't get the violence under control, and, you know, on through the 40s and 50s and Gordie Howe and guys like that policing the game, and then into the 70s with Mike Milbury and friends climbing into the stands, and the 80s with the sticks swinging and all of that, and I sort of take it all and just kind of wrap it up into one big essay on sort of how we got to where we are today and where we're likely to go, and, you know, that sort of stuff where it's, you know, the history, like before, the history is great and the history is important, but it's also where I think it really works is when you can then turn around and go, and how did this get us here today, and what can we maybe learn about what's going to happen tomorrow based on how things have broken down in the past.
Yeah, I remember the stick swinging from the realistic hockey movie Youngblood. You know, that's definitely how it worked.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, everybody thinks Slapshot is the real NHL, but sometimes it looks more like the end of Youngblood.
I'm very anxious, and I'm excited to reveal that while we were having this conversation, Pete, I think this is the first time we've done this, Sean, consider myself as your first ever all pre-order. I already did it. As you were talking, the book has been pre-ordered. I already got same day release. So I just want you to know that regardless of what happens, you know that I'm getting the book.
There you go. It was worth it. And listen to the happiness in his voice, everyone. Do you hear how excited he is? That could be you. You go and do the same thing right now and pre-order. Happiness is guaranteed.
I am flying right now. Implied.
Yeah, I mean, I already took October 30th off of work, so I can just, like, camp out at the mailbox when it comes, so... Yeah, but all kidding aside, I am genuinely interested to read it, and that would be true even if you weren't a guest on our show.
So, Sean, I actually want to ask this because again, feel free to use this opportunity to say like, well, you already bought the book, so you'll find out. But one of my most favorite memories, and I actually have the picture hung in my house, is of Ted Lindsay turning a stick around and firing it into the crowd in Toronto and. And I guess that's the other reason I, you know, basically the way you described your essay, like, I'd love to know more about that era because, like, you're right, like, in the way that the league has evolved through these years, you know, there's stuff that has been, that happens before our eyes, but then there's stuff that obviously has to get handed down to us. So, like, you know, learning more about that time because, I mean, that is, gosh, I'm just wondering what would happen now, like, even if we'd even remotely approach the same thing as, you know, hey, like, let's say, like, there's this, like, mammoth match between, like, the Blackhawks and the Maple Leafs at some point, right? And, like, for some reason, Patrick Kane is just, like, this complete and utter force just tormenting the Leafs. And then somebody, we already know how crazy Toronto media and fans can be. Like, would we even get anything as close to actually having somebody call it? And then on the flip side, have the opposing team flip it around and completely rub it in the fans' face. Like, hey, you said you were going to shoot me, but I just won the game. In overtime, so I'm glad we get to explore most of that.
I mean, there is so much stuff in there, and especially, you know, for those of us for whom the original Six era was maybe a little bit before our time, there's a ton of stories in the book of stuff where you're just, I mean, you can't even imagine it happening today, and not just original Six, and that's because that's the other interesting thing about the NHL's history is if you're a casual fan or even if you're just a big hockey fan but somebody who doesn't pay a ton of attention to the history, you kind of work from the assumption that this league began with the original Six. And, of course, that's not the case. The original Six era started in 1942. The league was 25 years old by then. There had been, dozens of teams that had kind of come and gone and some had worked and some hadn't. And, there's this whole weird history where it takes the NHL about 25 years to even form itself into what we would consider the old version of the NHL, the original Six, like the classic, where it's the Rocket and Gordie Howe and Ted Lindsay and all these guys. There's a quarter century before that where they're trying to figure all this stuff out. And yeah, there's crazy stories. There's stories of, you know, one owner who was, considered an entrepreneur, but really was basically a gangster, and he was crooked, and he had the gold judge was a member of his gang, and so one night the gold judge doesn't call a goal, and the other team's goaltender turns around and takes a swing at the gold judge, and oops, that's a bad move because he's on the payroll of the gangster who owns the other team, and now we've got a hit put out on this goaltender, it's crazy stuff, guys getting hit and. They're injured and their career's in danger and their dad is hopping on a train with a loaded gun to go and get revenge on and getting intercepted by the team's coach who, like, basically just gets them hammered on alcohol during the train trip so that they calm down enough to put the gun away and not go and do something crazy. I mean, there's just all this stuff where, yeah, I mean, you know, we sit around and spend weeks at a time arguing about the latest Tom Wilson hit, and that's what passes for things getting a little bit crazy in today's NHL. But good Lord, some of the stuff happening in decades past, it really will make you wonder if you're seeing things because it's just some of the stories are just way out there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of makes. The Mike Matheson smelling what the Rock is cooking with his takedown of Pettersson, obviously it was pretty messed up, but it does kind of pale in comparison to some of this other stuff. I remember I was reading, I still haven't finished it, and I'm a high school English teacher, and so a lot of times I'll start a book and then I have to do something for school, so I read like a book for school and I end up like stopping the book I'm reading and I come back to it later. But there's the Russian Five book. I think I got about halfway through it, and it's like some of the stuff in there is just unbelievable. I wanted to switch topics real quick because before this book, you wrote an ebook, an electronic book, with Dave Lozo and Greg Wyshynski, The 100 Greatest Players in NHL History, and I really enjoyed that. So what I wanted to ask you, because I remember when the NHL 100 list came out and it was – parts of it were kind of a joke. So I was really interested in reading, you know, the three of your takes on it. So now that a little bit of time has passed, are there any players on that you put on your list that you would move up or down like a lot? Like no, you know, not just like one spot, but like, is there anybody who like, you know, I thought he was in this range and now, wow, he's really actually in this range.
You know, there probably are as far as some of the active guys. I would hope we wouldn't change our minds too much on the guys who had already come and gone. That was an interesting book to work on because we sort of did two things where first we did have an objective component to it where we looked at awards and you know, individual all-star voting and that sort of thing to kind of give us a baseline so that it wasn't purely based on our opinion. And then the other thing was that it was three of us writing it, so we all kind of put our votes in. But we didn't know how the others were gonna vote, and there were some cases where for all three of us, there was some guys that we thought maybe ended up being a little too high, others a little too low. But it was nice because it gave us this plausible deniability. Where anytime I'm talking to somebody, and if they're like, "I'm really mad about this guy," I can go, "Yeah, I totally had that guy way higher. It was Dave who screwed that one up." But the one thing that in that book and in that list that we did that really set it apart from the NHL is, you know, the NHL only had six guys that are currently active on the entire list, whereas I don't remember what the number was, but we had at least twice that, and I think a fair bit more. And I mean, I couldn't for the life of me figure out why the NHL did it that way, for two reasons. First of all, today, I mean, Gary Bettman always is always telling us that the players are better today than ever before, and you know what? He's actually right. I mean, the skill level in today's game is clearly far better than it was even 20, 30 years ago, let alone the rest of the 100 years of the NHL. So on that basis alone, there should be more of today's player. But and if you're going to do something like this as a marketing exercise, for goodness sakes, get the guys that are currently selling tickets and are currently out there on, you know, pump their tires a little bit. And instead, the league basically had, you know, it was Crosby, Ovechkin, anyone who plays for the Chicago Blackhawks, and that was pretty much it. So we had a lot of guys quite a bit higher, and certainly even in the 2 years since, I think if we did the list again, Sidney Crosby would be higher. I think Alexander Ovechkin would be higher. I don't remember where those guys were. I think they were kind of in like the late teens, top 20 sort of range, but not yet in the top 10, and I think both of those guys, and probably Crosby more so, but certainly they both won Stanley Cup since we did the book, and I think they would both be higher, and I think some of the other guys that are active would be moving up, and maybe even some of the guys that are active today and didn't make the list would start to move up, and you know, that leads you to the point where you're bumping guys off the list, which is never easy to do, but that's another thing where anytime anyone gets mad at me, I can just tell them that, you know, ask them which player it is they're mad, and whoever they tell me, I'll just tell them that guy was 101st on the list. And
yeah, one of the things I really liked about it is, you know, how high you had Dominik Hasek. Because, you know, I think for people who are a little bit younger who never really got to see him in his prime, which lasted forever, I mean, he was just a monster.
Yep. Dominik Hasek is my pick for the greatest goaltender of all time. And I say that being very aware that you can make a case for Patrick Waugh, you can maybe make a case for Martin Brodeur, and then certainly if you're comparing across eras and you're trying to say, you know, was Dominik Hasek better than Glenn Hall or Ken Dryden or Jacques Plante, that gets very, very difficult, of course, as it does with anything when you're going across that many years. But the way that the position has evolved it really is kind of a night and day thing to what it looked like 50 years ago. But you know what? That's a case where that's my eyes telling me that, because I was able to watch Dominik Hasek through his prime. But the numbers will tell you too. I mean, there was a time where the numbers he was putting up versus all the other goaltenders in the league was just ridiculous. And so, you know, I do see the argument for other guys, but for me, and you know, when we were putting the list together, as far as my ballot, Dominik Hasek is the best that has ever done it in the NHL.
I'm glad we settled that, because that's the correct answer. That's good. I'm glad we all agree on the same thing. So Sean, I wanted to ask you, in terms of like current events, is there any, especially with now the, you know, with kind of the book and part of the conversation we're having, in your opinion, what's the most laughably frustrating thing with this league right now? Like, what's the one thing where you're like, why this should not be a problem, but here we are. Why is this still a thing?
I'll give you two. One's a little bit more big picture, and it's one that I've been banging this drum for years and years now. But the fact that scoring rates are as low as they have been for the last 20 plus years, really, at this point, is I think an absolute embarrassment and an absolute indictment of Gary Bettman and his leadership as the guy running this show. Because you know, I'm certainly aware that, look, we've all seen 1-0 games that were fantastic. We've all seen low-scoring games that were end-to-end and great chances, and the puck wasn't going in, and they're fantastic games. We've also seen 1-0 games that were absolutely unwatchable. We've seen games where it's just clutch and grab in the neutral zone, and nobody's getting a chance, and when they do get a chance, nobody has any room, and if they do get a shot off, there's three guys blocking it, and the game ends up 1-0 because the puck bounces in off someone's behind on a total fluke, and it just can't sell a product like that. And I, you know, one of my favorite things that I've ever written was I did a piece for ESPN about 3 years ago where I said, here's a history of the NHL acting like it's going to do something about goal scoring rates. And it was just I went back 20 years, and every single year I was able to find an article in a paper somewhere with Gary Bettman or somebody like that saying, we're going to do something about this, and we're going to get scoring rates back up, and just never, ever following through. And you compare that to the NFL, where a few years ago, you know, Patriots and Colts in the AFC Championship, and you know, everyone expecting this high-scoring shootout, and instead the Patriots come out and just completely shut them down by basically mugging the wide receivers at the line. The NFL, they don't form a committee. They don't say, let's talk about this. They don't say, let's spend the next 20 years acting like we're going to do something. They changed the rules, or the way the rules were called, that season. Right away, that off season, they said, we're not doing this. New rules, new way to call those rules. And, you know, the offense has been off the charts ever since. And you compare that to the NHL just constantly saying, we got to do something. And then they come in and they, well, we moved the face-off dot a third of an inch to the left. Not going to do anything. So that's the big picture one, and that's the one that really gets to me. And there is actually a fairly long section in the book where I kind of go into more detail about how we got to this point, and, you know, to the point where even last year, goal scoring went up by 0.2 a game, and people are like, wow, scoring is back. And it's like, no, it's not. Look at history, man. Like, I mean, it's, yeah, just because it's higher than it was a few years ago, I mean, it really, and this is partly because I'm old enough where I've seen hockey when it's high scoring and end to end and lots of scoring chances, and I know how much fun it is. That's what hooked me. That's how I fell in love with this game. And just seeing the NHL with all of this skill and talent and everything go out and try to market this game that is so often just so ugly and just flat out boring. And, you know, everybody, you know, any game you play, somebody out there is watching your product for the very first time. And just way too often the NHL puts something out there that is completely unwatchable, and you're never going to get that person back. That's it. That person will never be a hockey fan. So that's the big picture one for me. The smaller picture one that I actually could see something being fixed someday, although I'm starting to lose hope, is this stupid loser point. The fact that we have to call
yes.
up the standings. In a league where you can either win or you can lose, but there's three columns, and we give out extra points, and everyone's over 500, and isn't this wonderful? And, you know, this team is... I saw something here where they're like, yeah, this team has an undefeated streak going. And you're like, what's an undefeated streak? You win or you lose in this league. What are we talking about? Yeah. And it drives me crazy. And that's one, I've said this before, where I think that at some point we're going to change. We're either going to go to a 3-2-1 system, or we'll just go to wins and losses, whatever it is. 10 or 20 years from now, your kids or your grandkids, they're going to look at the standings and be like, what were you guys thinking? Why did you let the standings look like this? And it's going to feel to them like it feels to us when we see pictures of players in Cooperalls. We're just like, who thought this was a good idea? It's going to be the same sort of thing with this stupid way the standings are. But, of course, the thing that really bothers me about it is not only does it make everything look stupid, but the NHL acts like we're stupid because they tell us that it makes the playoff races closer when it doesn't. It doesn't do anything to make the playoff race. If everybody's getting bonus points at the same rate, you're not making anything closer. All you're doing is you're artificially inflating the records so that the GMs, who are the ones who vote on this, can go to their owner and say, well, we were over 500 even though we lost 50 games in an 82-game season. That's the only reason we have it, and eventually, I don't know if it might not be during the Bettman era, but eventually somebody's going to come in and go, let's stop treating our fans like they're morons and just give them standings that make sense.
Absolutely.
That was poetic. I love this. That was great. That's everything I wanted to hear about. Yeah. You like my feelings are like almost the exact same, but they were amorphous. They were just a blob. They weren't refined. You just described it perfectly.
When I am elected commissioner.
Yes.
All right, so Sean, we have one question for you, one last question, and we'll let you go. So I saw on Twitter that you were interacting with one of my good friends, Kelly, from Broad Street Hockey, about a potential podcast with you and Gritty called Gritskits, which, number one, I am 100% here for. I will start the Patreon myself. On a serious note, because I mean, obviously that would be unbelievable if you. I have no idea what Gritty sounds like. I have an internal. I was going to say image, but I guess I like an audio of what Gritty sounds like, but it's probably wrong. So my question is, like, obviously, number one, right now you're not currently doing a podcast. So are you, you know, is there any plan to do that in the near future? I hope so. But then my last question is, you know, obviously I enjoy reading your writing. I enjoy listening to your podcast. But what hockey writers do you enjoy reading, and what podcasts do you like to listen to?
Well, as far as doing a podcast, yes, I hope there will be something. I don't have details yet, but there have been those conversations. Having Biscuits and the Way It Did caught us a little bit off guard, because the hope had been to go into a third season, and then if people haven't heard the story, it's because Dave Lozo, the co-host, got a job at ESPN, which was fantastic, and it was a great move for him. But because he was now working at one sports media place, they would not let him continue to do a podcast that was hosted by a different sports media place, which is very reasonable, I think.
So, it makes sense. I've talked
to The Athletic about maybe doing something there. I do have it in my deal with them that I can continue. I could have continued to do Biscuits if they had been able to, and so I am still open to potentially doing something somewhere else. We'll see. I certainly would hope that at some point during the season we can put something together. But I think with the start of the season having come and gone already, there's maybe not as much pressure to get something out the door, and I'd rather make sure it's something that I feel like is a good fit and that I'm happy with. As far as who I read and who I listen to, it's actually funny. I've never been a podcast guy. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, and that was part of what made it very interesting to do Biscuits, because, you know, you certainly hear anyone who listens to those episodes, you know, even all two years of them, but certainly in the early going, it's very much Dave who's driving the bus, because I really don't know what I'm doing. Like, what are we talking about? What are we supposed to be doing here? But, as far as the ones that I read, I mean, it's a bit of a hometown answer, but I really do think that the roster that The Athletic has put together is just fantastic at this point. They really have got almost a who's who, and you know, Craig Cousins is great, Pierre LeBrun is great, going down the list. I love Justin Bourne's pieces, because he's the only guy out there that seems to be writing about X's and O's in a way that I can actually understand. And I feel like when you compare hockey to other sports, there's just so little like strategy, X and O talk. Where we just kind of all saw, well, yeah, they gotta compete harder and they gotta want it more, and it's like, no, sometimes maybe it's because their zone entries have to be in a different way, and here's how it could look. And so I really like his stuff. Outside of that, I mean, Bob McKenzie has been fantastic for years. I love Elliot Friedman. I love his 31 Thoughts column. That's kind of my one and only can't-miss column of every week, where I have to sort of drop thing and read it whenever it comes out, and go on down the list. I mean, I'm not much of a podcast guy, but I'm a big reader. I spend most of my time online, it feels like, reading other people's stuff and then kind of wishing that I had thought of it first and could have got to it. But it's a good time to be a hockey fan, and because it feels like there's just so much good content out there and so many people producing stuff and so many people pushing those people and putting themselves to be the next generation who sort of comes in and raises the bar even higher.
Well, of course, it is an exciting time now, but like after October 30th, it'll be even more exciting because your book will be out and we'll all be there for it. So, Sean, that just about hits our time here. We wanted to say thank you for coming on our humble program here. For those of you who may have been, this may have been your first time interacting with the Down Goes Brown Magic, and you just want to know where to find them. Well, it's very easy. Just at Down Goes Brown. That's pretty simple. And as we've already said a billion times, Sean's new book will be coming out on October 30th. We are elated and excited to get our eyeballs on it, because as much as we would have liked you to preview anything and everything inside of it, I'm glad we really didn't ask you to do that, Sean. I think we pretty much tiptoed around it the entire time, and now it will be a surprise for everybody, as it should be. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me, and I hope people do check out the book. And like you said, you can pre-order it right now, and you'll get it ASAP when it comes out. And I will leave you with one piece, just because I know a lot of the audience is going to be Red Wings fans. There are 25 chapters in the book covering the entire history of the NHL. An entire chapter of that book is dedicated to the Red Wings Avalanche rivalry. I figured,
beauty!
They needed their own.
I think you just sold a bunch of books.
So you know, if you're that kind of gives you an idea of where my perspective is coming from and how I'm handling this. I kind of had to skimp a little bit on some of the 1930s to make room, but I figured we had to go deep on all of the shenanigans that went on there.
All right.
Perfect. Well, Sean, I think I can hear the order counter just flipping zeros after zeros and the numbers shooting up there, because I know we do have a lot of Red Wing fans on there, so I think that's that's a great final boost. So thanks again for coming on, man. And, you know, hey, maybe we'll have you on again soon, right? I mean, hopefully it's not just another thing where it's like we just tell you about the book that you wrote. So
we'll do it. We'll try to get, maybe two or three times. Maybe we'll do one for every Red Wings win during the season, and that'll that'll space it out well.
I don't know. Four podcasts?
Book
that's
it,
a lot.
Book it. I think we can make it happen.
All right. All right. Just lost all those pre-orders. Awesome. Oh, well.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. All right.
Once again, we thank you. We thank Mr. Sean McAdoo for stopping by. I will never again wonder what Down Goes Brown means. we're all enlightened once more. So for our final segment on this lovely edition of the For Sure podcast, we're going to have some way too early predictions. Now, Pete, a lot of people like to quibble or be a little bit snarky or unsure about how you define way too early predictions. So I'm not going to clarify. These are okay. This is just our way too early predictions about literally anything. I think it'll help, because obviously as the season goes on, we can, you know, not tell anybody that we changed our choices, and then make it look like we were smart all along. So I'm excited to see what both of us are thinking in terms of what we actually want to have or think will have happen around when the season's done, / who's taking home some hardware. So I want to start off with the heart. I'm making a bold, early, way too early prediction for the heart. You ready for this?
Yeah.
John freaking Tavares.
Oh, see, it's interesting. I thought you were going to go somewhere else, and I'm actually going to piggyback off you once we're done talking about this, and I will also make a prediction for the Heart starting with John, but it is a different John.
Oh, a different John. Okay, so yeah. So leading off with the John that I said, I know this is going to sound weird to you, Peter, because this is basically the part where I have to say that the Islanders just did not do everything they could to turn Tavares into even more of a beast of a player than he already is. But the way that the Islanders were set up all those years during, you know, I would still consider Tavares in his prime years. I'd say he's got the grizzled veteran magic going for him right now. But obviously he's, you know, not as young as the number one pick that he was. So I think that now that he's surrounded by some of the most absurdly talented players that the Leafs have ever had their hands on, this is taking a new car for a spin. This is the engine is tuned up. I think before, I think maybe Tavares was a little concerned about how much of the load he had to carry for the team. But now that he's in Toronto and he's surrounded by just a cavalcade of horrors of extremely talented people, and they are currently without one of those people because he's currently holding out for more money, that would be Mr. William Nylander. But if he does sign, Tavares is surrounded by probably the most talent he's been able to be surrounded since probably if he was playing in juniors or if he was playing on either an Olympic team or any of the World Cup hockey teams. So that's only going to make good players better. I know you can argue about that because that's kind of the way All-Star games have fallen by the wayside in terms of what type of product you're going to get on there. Because, yes, you put it. You know, you can always make the 1980s Olympic thing where it's like, yeah, the Russia beat the NHL All-Stars. It's like, yeah, you're playing a team of guys who don't play together. Yes, individually on their own, they are All-Stars, but you just can't throw them together on a team and expect them to be cohesive. So I think, you know, yes, I think Austin Matthews is, you know, a very talented piece to the Toronto juggernaut, but My impression right now is that Tavares is going to be he puts both sides of the double dragon coin together. He drinks Michael Jordan's secret stuff, and maybe a Green Lantern ring thrown in there as well. He's only going to be completely improved by having the amount of players around him, and he's going to be absolutely integral to whatever the Leafs do moving forward, right? Whatever they do is going to be contingent upon him, and I think he's really going to step up, and that's why he's going to do that. So I've already said the same thing five times in a row, I think, right there. So I now defer to you.
No, it was like we talked about last time when we were talking to Will, where, you know, from the very beginning, the very first time that I saw Tavares play at the first time I saw was at the World Juniors before he was drafted, and I was just blown away at how he was able to get open every time. It was unbelievable to me, and so I really thought that was, you know, a sign that he's a special person, a special player, and I definitely think that continued. We're recording this segment before we talk to Sean for the interview, even though you're listening to it after. So I don't know if we're going to get into this with him, but I definitely did want to bring this up a little bit. Sometimes I still go back to the old Lighthouse Hockey to kind of check in and see how Islanders fans are doing, even though I don't really follow the team anymore. You know, my brother does, my dad does, so some of my friends still do. So I'm still kind of connected a little bit in that way, I guess, like a secondhand connection. But I have to tell you, I was kind of surprised. I guess I shouldn't be, but I was just surprised at the vitriol that the commenters there have for Tavares. And again, I'm not surprised that they are upset with him. I'm not surprised maybe that they hate him, but just like the level was kind of astonishing to me.
And now
here's the thing. I don't want to make it sound like I'm talking down about them, because I'm not. I mean, people can fan how they want to fan. People can be upset if they want to be upset. I'm not trying to say that they're being upset is wrong or something like that. It just was surprising to me the level. But then at the same time, I mean, imagine if for Detroit fans, if like, you know, when he got to be an unrestricted free agent, Dylan Larkin left the team and went to, you know, Toronto or San Jose or Montreal or any other team. I think Detroit fans would probably be pretty upset at him. Now, granted, the situation I think is a little bit different because of the almost comical ineptness that the Islander organization has been prone to for a very long time.
Not every day your team theme song is the Benny Hill soundtrack. It's not.
But yeah, so yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting because I think Tavares is obviously a very, very good player, and now to have him surrounded by that level of play. I mean, he did have some good players on the Islanders, obviously Barzal. But this year, I'm keeping track of power play stats on some charts that are on my Twitter. And one of the things that's just jumped out at me is the performance of Anders Lee on the Islanders.
Okay.
Individually, he has the most high danger chances for on the power play in the entire NHL. Mm. He's tied with Wayne Simmonds.
Love me some high danger.
So to put that in context, he has five more than John Tavares, who is the highest Maple Leaf on that thing, or on that chart.
Yep.
He's also right near the top in some other categories. So, you know, Anders Lee's a really, really good player. I think he's probably one of the more underrated players in the NHL. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if he has another big season without Tavares.
Maybe they'll just
credit it to Barzal. They're like, oh well, now he's getting help from Barzal. And like, to be honest, like I said, I don't follow the team that closely. I don't even know if they play on the same power play. You know, I would imagine they do, just because that seems to make sense. But you never know. Sometimes life doesn't make sense. So I'm going to jump to my early prediction, and I am going to say that the Hart Trophy is going to go to John Gibson.
Ooh.
Because John Gibson is off to an unbelievable start for the Ducks. He has just faced a ridiculous amount of shots, ridiculous amount of like really great shots. Let me put it this way: his high danger save percentage, right? So for people listening who aren't as into stats as I am, and I know you might not be as much as me, but I know you're still, you know, pretty to most of the details. So, basically, people have found that high danger save percentage is, I don't want to say the best, because like with goalies, it's really tough, like we always talk about. But, you know, if you're just measuring like just straight up save percentage, there's so many factors that can go into that that make it not really the greatest stat to use. So if you're looking at high danger save percentage, it's basically most goalies are going to stop the low danger ones and the medium danger. It's the high danger ones where you get a lot of spread in how good they are at stopping them. And John Gibson has a high danger save percentage of 94.4%. He has saved 8.73 goals above average, right? So goals saved above average. They take, you know, what they believe to be the average NHL goalie. If he faced that quantity and quality of shots, how many goals would he let in? And John Gibson has saved almost 9 more than a league average goalie. So he's number one. Lundqvist is him and Lundqvist are pretty much far and away the leaders of the pack right now. Lundqvist is a little over 6. But yeah, so Gibson is off to an unbelievable start. And so if he can keep this up, I think he definitely has a good chance. So I rambled a bit about about your pick. So, you know, if you want to follow up on that and then get to yours, so we don't go too
far. No. I don't know. Maybe I want your pick more because when was the last time a goalie won the Hart? You know, like when was the last time that was a thing? I don't know if we can on the spot look it up pretty quick.
If you want, like you keep talking, I'll look it up.
Yeah, because I'm. What is that a, you know, is it a, you know, because I don't, what is that one of those things, you know, like whether in baseball where it's the, oh yeah, well the Cy Young is reserved for the best goalie or the best pitcher, so it doesn't really stand to reason or it's not really logistical to put him also as the MVP, where like that has happened, like the times where, you know, like Justin Verlander, for example, you know, he's the MVP and Cy Young winner. So, like, I don't know if the hockey world has this same reverence for those things where it's like, listen, if you're the best goalie, you know, the only thing you can really look forward to is the Vezina.
Well, yeah. So, okay. So for people listening at home, you've had enough time to yell at us. So it's actually happened relatively recently. Like, so Jay, without looking, like, what's your guess? I'll tell you, it happened 4 years ago.
4 years ago. So we're talking 2014.
2014, 2015.
Okay. So the Blackhawks won that year, right? Is that right? Or no? Because they were, no, 14, no, 14, 15. No, that was Hawks because that was the shortened season.
Okay.
Right. So Hawks won that year. Because the, believe me, I feel like I would remember that depression very clearly. So, gosh, you know, like, so the Hawks won that would be a Crawford year, but I don't think Crawford was that much of a heart candidate that year because the fact that he had to fight his way back to, well, he was down.
Yeah, it was the Blackhawks over the Lightning.
Yeah, Hawks over the Lightning. Okay, so. Well, if it was over the Lightning, you know, we've seen the losers get stuff. Okay, my guess is Ben Bishop. How about that?
That is not correct. It was Carey Price.
Oh, how could I be so stupid?
But, that, okay, makes so much
sense, though. That makes so much sense. I am an idiot. Okay.
No, it's okay. Like, here's the thing, because here's your point. Because, like, from looking it up, it actually really, really, really underlines the point that you were making before. Because even though Carey Price won 4 years ago, let's go back and look at the other most recent goalies to win the Hart Trophy. Okay. So let me ask you a question. In the last 40 years, how many goalies do you think have won the Hart Trophy?
Six.
Okay. So let's walk through it, right? So Carey Price in 14-15.
Okay.
Then the next one, Jose Theodore in 2001-2002.
Whoa, okay.
Then, now I'll count this as two. Dominic Hasek won it twice in a row.
Okay.
For Buffalo. 97-98 and 96-97. I know one of those years was where he basically carried them to the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
Or Stanley Cup final, I'm sorry. Because we all know Brett Hull.
We all know what happened there.
We all know what happened, yeah. All right, so that's up to four. Because it's the same person, but I'll count it.
Okay.
Scrolling. We are now in the 70s. And the next person, which was more than 40 years ago, it was Jacques Plante in 61-62.
Okay, well, if you didn't...
Then you have to go back to the 50s. So,
wow.
Okay. To win the Hart Trophy as a goalie does not happen very often.
Okay.
Like, you have to have an incredible year. Or be Dominic Hasek and basically just be like a space alien.
Okay, yeah. So I was within 1/2, given that you counted him twice. But, okay, all right. So that's... Okay, that makes a little bit of sense. You know, hey, You've got your own trophy, goalie. Just get your hands off my heart, you know. But
I was gonna say, quit playing games with my heart.
My heart. Yeah. Okay, so right. That settles our heart stuff. I am very excited to announce that your 2018-2019 Maurice the Rocket Richard Trophy recipient will be Patrick Laine.
Well, we can save a little time because that was going to be mine too. So let's both talk about why our Finnish little son is going to do it, because I have a really good reason. Obviously, I'm not saying your reasoning is not going to be good, but I definitely have one saved up. So I'm interested to see what you have to say.
I think my reason is just mostly kind of like based on just the ascent that happened last year that we saw, and I think with all of that experience now. There's I think he's just the best. Yes, we're talking. Okay, yes, Matthews is already shooting out of the cannon here, right? But when I watch Patrick Laine play, and like there is a play that I usually try to do in NHL 19, where it's kind of like circle along the boards, kind of lead by the circle, and then just like try and create some space a little bit to the point where enough of an opening to just like kind of make it look like I'm doing a far side deke, but then basically just like wrist it, just like a wrist shot, just as quick as possible. And like I see that happening in a video game, and I'm like, ooh, that's really cool. The only person I've seen able to match that speed and accuracy is Patrick Laine. And last year, the way that I saw him scoring, I don't know, dude. Like if there were 10 more games in the season, just again, I think his acceleration and his quick release are currently unmatched. I mean, I guess we'll obviously see how, given the way Matthews has started, but man, just there's something about, you can just, the way he, when he's in the slot or when he's just, when he gets just that amount of space, I don't know, it's like this laser lock system. He's just this miss, it's uncanny because you can see it line up. You know, everybody watches hockey with that, you know, if you watch it long enough, you can obviously tell when a scoring chance is developing to the point where it's like, okay, this is going to, like, okay, you're like, you feel it. You feel it in your plums.
Yeah.
You feel it in your plums. A scoring chance or a goal is about to happen. And
I feel it in my fingers.
Yeah.
And I also feel it in my toes.
Goal scoring's all around me and the feeling gross.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I think given a, and especially with the disappointment of getting eliminated last year, he is going to do everything in his power to ensure a return trip to the playoffs, which means probably having to put the team on his back, though. And that's going to result in lots and lots and lots of goals being scored. Heaven help the Red Wings. if their current goals against average is going to stay this way, just like the way David Pastrnak established himself currently in the leaderboards against us, Patrick Laine could have a field day against us, which will obviously tear my allegiances just to shreds. So that.
Well, I mean, like, okay, like as you were talking, I pulled this up. Okay, the Winnipeg top six, top line: Kyle Connor, Scheifele, and Blake Wheeler. Like, this is from Daily Faceoff. So this is as it currently stands. Second line: Nikolai Ehlers, Brian Little, Patrick Laine. Right, so if you've ever been on Daily Faceoff, first of all, if you haven't, you got to go on there. Right? Daily Faceoff, especially if you play fantasy, but even if you don't, it's great. They have line combinations, they have starting goalies for each day, et cetera, et cetera. But what they do is they have this ranking for, you know, what number of position this player is. Right, so right now, their top line, they have Kyle Connor as the 21st left wing. Mark Scheifele is the 9th center, and then Blake Wheeler is the 8th right wing. Together, that line is the 7th first line in the NHL, according to this, right?
Yeah.
But their second line is also 7th. You know what I'm saying? Like, their second line is also... So it's like, okay, yeah, you can beat... You know, maybe you can try to shut down the Scheifele line. But then you got Patrick Laine riding shotgun with Brian Little and Nikolai Ehlers on the second line.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, it's kind of like the Matthews Tavares or the Malkin and Crosby, but for an entire line.
Yeah.
And it's just like, how do you do that? It's pretty incredible. And then their fourth line is ranked the number 5 fourth line. So they have three of their lines are ranked in the top 7, which I haven't had time to go through each team and see, but yeah. And by the way, when you look at their defense, their second line second pairing is number 5 and their third pairing is number 2. So
wow.
And their first pairing is 15, so I mean that's about league average for top line. So I mean they are just unbelievable. They've obviously not gotten off to as good of a start as you would have expected, but they're still right now, you know, if the season ends today, they'd still be third in the division. They still clinch a playoff spot.
Yep.
And I think they got off to a slow start last year too. I think they're going to be just fine.
Yep.
So yeah, like I said, that was going to be my pick as well, and I don't really see any need to keep going on it. But yeah, Patrick Laine is my pick. Although again, I mean, if Austin Matthews doesn't cool down, I mean he could definitely be making a run for that Rocket Richard trophy, because there's been some I don't want to say debate, because it's not really a debate, because as our guest pointed out in an article this week. Even the people that say, like, is there a question of who the best play, if it's Matthews or McDavid, like, which one's better? Yeah. Like, they always end up with saying, well, it's McDavid, but it's an interesting question. But at the same time, like, if you're talking about shooting, Matthews is clearly better than McDavid.
Yeah.
Matthews is clearly a better shooter. But McDavid is probably better at most of the other things. And I mean, that's not to put down Austin Matthews. I mean, Connor McDavid is just unreal. If you watch him play, it's just... Like, you know, you're sitting there in awe of some of the things.
Well, it's a classic example of somebody's speed slider getting turned down in favor of their shooting, whereas McDavid's shooting slider's turned down in favor of his speed. And and his vision. Okay. So, yeah.
All right, so we don't have time to do one more each. We're going to make it a little quick to make sure we can wrap up the show on time. So mine, my early prediction, and obviously I'm way out in the weeds on this because I don't know when he's going to return to play, but I am going to say Elias Pettersson is going to break 40 goals.
Ooh.
I'm going to go crazy. I'm going to say he's going to break 40 goals because I think it's obvious. I think I'd probably go with 30, but I am going to be bold here. I'm going to be daring. I'm going to be bold and also daring, and I'm going to go with 40 because I really do think from watching him play, I do think he's a special player. I don't think he's going to be a generational player like McDavid, possibly Matthews, depending on what happens. But I think he's going to be like the next level down. Like he's going to be a very high-end elite player in the NHL from what I've seen. If he can avoid WWE finishing moves.
Yeah, that would... Yeah, it's...
So what do you got for your last
weird.
One?
It's like almost... It's not supposed to be part of the game. That's weird.
It's yeah. Weird. It's almost like it's not a hockey play.
Yeah, it's like just a dick move. okay, so Ottawa fans, I have to say it. Erik Karlsson is going to be the number one defenseman this season. I think it's kind of off to a slow start, but hey, you're always going to try and find your legs when you're moving. But I think I think Karlsson is just going to be benefiting from the embarrassment of riches that is the super all-time mega awesome. We're really good at the regular season Sharks. So I think having obviously Brent Burns and Pavelski and Couture and, you know, even with the newly shorn Joe Thornton, it's we are in for some filthiness. And the fact that it hasn't started yet means it's going to be even more disgusting when it happens.
Yeah.
So, so that wraps up our way too early predictions. We might have a couple more as the weeks drove on, and then obviously we'll have a better idea as the season begins to mature. But before we close this out, Peter would like to give an awesome reminder about what we're doing with our For Shirt sales and other merch. What are we doing again, Peter?
Oh, yeah. So at the Wing It and Motown website, we are donating at the Wing It and Motown website, we're doing another charity challenge. We're doing another drive, basically, to raise some money for the Concussion Legacy Foundation. If you head to wingitandmotown.com, you can see all the details there. Last year, we raised over $2,300. This year, we're trying to top that. So basically, the way it works is you pick a player, or it could be players, and you decide that you're going to donate a certain amount of money at the end of the season for everything they do. So, for example, if you pick Dylan Larkin and you say, I'm going to pick a dollar for every point he scores, and he scores 50 points, let's say 60 points, right, then you would pledge $60. You can also do a minimum, right? So, like, let's say you're going to say, no matter what happens, I'm going to pledge $100, but I'm going to do $2, you know, $2 for every point somebody scores, or $2 for every penalty minute that somebody takes, or whatever. It could be anything. And then if you typically if you have like a minimum, you know, so like I'm going to pledge a minimum of $50 or $100 or whatever. And as long as it's $25 or more, then we are going to do a drawing at the end of the year, and we are going to raffle off a Red Wings sweater of your choice to the winner. So as long as you use $25 or more, you will be entered into that drawing, and you could possibly get a free Red Wings jersey, which would be fantastic. And it personalized, right, with the player of your choice. And so what we're going to do for sure is we are going to donate all the proceeds that we make from our merch store, which is at tinyurl.com/forshirt. That's F-E-R-S-H-I-R-T. We will be donating all of the proceeds that we make from that to the Concussion Legacy Foundation through the month of November. All right, so you have plenty of time to do that. Every so often there's a sale on Teespring, which is the site that we use, so check that out. And also, to wrap it up, you can follow us on the social medias. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at PFlynnHockey. Jay is at @TheRoar_24. Our podcast is at 200FootPod. That's 200FTPOD. And you can follow Sean McAdoo at Down Goes Brown. which is, again, really easy to remember. Yep. And also, he has a book coming out, but he has several books that were out before. There's a book you can get on Amazon, The Best of Down Goes Brown, from his old stuff. He also wrote a book with Dave Lozo and Greg Wyshynski, an e-book, The 100 Greatest Players in NHL History. And his new book coming out is The Down Goes Brown History of the NHL, The World's Most Beautiful Sport, The World's Most Ridiculous League.
Yep.
So if you enjoyed listening to Sean today on our interview, as I'm sure you did, then you can go check that out. You can pre-order it now. It comes out October 30th. And I know that pre-ordering can really help an author. So if you like him and you want to help support him, the best thing you can do is pre-order that book.
And I just want to let everybody know our current funding update is we have tens of dollars. So we would love to see a situation where we don't have to say tens of dollars. We want to let's start repping some for shirts and donate some money to the Concussion Legacy. So get after it. And Pete, we'll obviously see them very soon, won't we?
Absolutely.
Absolutely we will. So
yeah, so we'll be back at you in a couple weeks. We have another good guest lined up. It's not officially confirmed in terms of like the time that we're going to record, so I don't want to say who it is yet. But we do have another really good guest lined up, as has been usual for the whole show. We've been really lucky to get such great people to come on and talk to us.
Yep.
So hopefully the listeners are enjoying that, because I know we're having a lot of fun talking.
Yeah, and I'm very curious if we'll ever get into a situation where we have to be like Jimmy Kimmel. So I think what we could do is for every interview that's like more than 4 weeks away, we could just say apology James Edwards III, we ran out of time. So yeah. We'll see you kids soon.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
Alright, second best fight of the week. Best fight. Bob Probert and Ty Domi. Sure. Well, okay, maybe it was the best fight of the week. I think the best fight of the week was this one coming up right here. Yes, guys. It's the one throwing right hands at Lefebvre. Another right hand by Brown. Lefebvre gets an uppercut. Down goes Brown! Down goes Brown!
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.